Hello and welcome back to Talk a Good Game, the Meath Chronicle Sports Podcast, with myself, Tom Dannan. We're joined again by Ferd Lynch and Jimmy Dayden. How are you getting on, lads?
Good, Tom.
We just come into your little studio here. We're going to, instead of calling it Meath Chronicle Towers, we're now going to call it the Pigeon Loft.
Right.
For the listeners, there's a little small window that overlooks the river here. Or overlooks the town of Navan, and the window has obviously been left open, and pigeons have come in, and there's feathers and bird shite all over the basement. So yeah. It's going to be now known as the Pigeon Loft.
Tom's office is the Pigeon Loft now.
If you hear a scatter, it means there's still a pigeon loose in here somewhere, and Jimmy's gone chasing after it, plucking feathers.
Yeah.
He's not a pheasant plucker, he's a pheasant plucker son, isn't that right?
Well, I'm not going to...
In their only proper way.
It's certainly a
pigeon plucker.
Pigeons have been around here, guys, but not at the moment, I don't think. I think we're safe enough.
Yeah, he is still more comfortable than some press rooms across the different stadiums.
Yeah, it's nearly a second home. It's quite like the press box at Hartoshan with all the pigeon shit that's around the place.
We
need is just a couple of Dettol wipes and it's like home.
Yeah, that's it.
Being Hartoshan, not home, being home.
Yeah.
So anyway, pigeon racing is a thing, but that's not what we're here to discuss.
No, we're here to discuss the action at the weekend, Ferdl. And starting off, the Meath hurlers had, after all the crap that went on over the last feast, they had a very promising performance against Down at the weekend, did they?
Yeah, look at it. I've had a few gripes about just this whole Joe McDonough thing, you know, and the treatment it's received, and Meade just didn't let any of that bother them, and they went off up and they played their game in Ballycran. But I think the GAA's treatment of second tier hurling and third tier hurling, and even down to Laurie Marr hurling, just the treatment of it is pathetic, really. It's just given, you know, it's a tokenism is really the only type of publicity is all that the GAA give it. Like, up until Friday, there wasn't an iota of information about the Joe McDonagh Cup available anywhere. There was no previews, no nothing. I saw Damien Stack and the Kerry man was tweeting about it, and several other people had tweeted about it. And then there was no sign of teams being released. And then all of a sudden, this preview piece appeared on the GAA.ie and GAA.ie for the Joe McDonagh Cup. And I said, oh, great, finally, they've had some sort of a launch or something. And it's a 633-word preview of all three games. Mm-hmm. And those previews included the six teams. So by the time you took the six teams out of it, it was down to 276 words of a preview for three games, which amounted to something like 92 words. And as I said, that's literally three column inches in a newspaper per game in what's meant to be tier two hurling. Like, when you see the publicity that Clare and Limerick get, and rightly get, and Waterford and Cork, and Galway were playing over the weekend, and Galway, Carlow, Dublin, or Wexford, Kilkenny. You know, when you see the publicity that, or Wexford or Kilkenny Antrim, but when you see the publicity that those games get, and it's great, and the hurling was great, even though looking at the Sunday game, it's funny how they want the rules of some game. You know, hurling is great and it's fast paced and it's tough and all that, but it's nearly like they don't want the rules to apply, them saying that. You know, they were square balls, but sure, they were right not to rule them out. It only added to the excitement of the game. That's like allowing the offside goals in the Man United Coventry game, which, you know, the goal was clearly offside, but sure, for the romance of the cup, sure, they should have let it stand. No, you can't. You have to apply the rules.
But in
terms of promotion for the Joe McDonagh Cup, it was pathetic, and really does an injustice to the effort that the lads put in. Like, I know there's been a bit of upheaval in the Meath hurling camp, but that doesn't mean that those lads don't have value in wearing their jersey or pride in wearing their jersey as much as the Limerick lads have, or that the Meath lads haven't put in as much work. I'm sure they have, maybe not to the same level or standard as the Limerick boys operate at, but to the extent that as much as they can, the Meath lads and the Down lads and the Kerry, Westmeath, Leashes and Offaly's that are contesting the Joe McDonagh Cup have put in as much effort into playing Championship hurling at this time of the year as any of the Clare or Limerick or Kilkenny or Galway or Tipperary or Waterford lads have. And it's just a shame that they don't get the recognition they deserve. Yeah. But
sure.
Meath Chronicle tried to give them their due. We followed them last year, you know.
If you don't mind me making a point there on that as well, like maybe there's a wider conversation to be had about the GA's press release. Like I remember, this is going off on some medicine, but I remember Kilmacud-Crote, when there was the controversy about the extra player in the club final.
Yeah.
They had released a press release and it was only about 18 words or something.
Yeah.
It was the same when Mary Matalise was appointed LGFA, that role that she got.
Yeah, the integration. Yeah,
that whole press release thing, it just doesn't seem to be maybe there's that something that they do need to look at in terms of giving them information, in terms of press release to GA. Because I know the LGFA themselves do a great job with the press releases, don't they?
Well, the LGFA try to get as much coverage out there and they get reporters to cover all their games.
Yeah.
Of course, they have their failings as well in certain aspects in that we're late to get fixtures, you know, like such an effort to try and find out where the Meath-Leash game was going to be played this weekend. And then this whole line of the volunteer is trotted out to you. And that's well and good. People are volunteers. Of course they are. I volunteer in the LGFA. We all volunteer in different sporting organisations. Yeah. But just because you're a volunteer or something doesn't mean that you should do a substandard job.
If
the doctors in medicine San Frontier are heading off all over the world volunteering their services, then they're still going to do the best job they possibly can. They're not going to turn around and say, "Oh no, I couldn't save his life because I'm only a volunteer." If you're committing to do something, do it right. But we had this discussion. We were talking about it earlier on about the issuing of press releases and how organisations, the GAA, and we've seen it with the FAI during the week about how they're trying to control the narrative and direct the flow of each of the news. Like that FAI interview with Mark Canham, the I don't know what his official title is, but he's FAI chief, the head man.
Operations man or something like that.
Yeah, but like to have their own in-house questioning of him about when the new manager is coming. And then just posting it up on their social medias without any independent journalism, without any investigative proper questions from journalists. Now the guy that did it is a renowned or a well-respected and highly regarded journalist, but he's working for the FAI. So the questions were clearly given to Mark Cannon before the interview because his answers were so well rehearsed.
Yeah.
But you know, where's the hard questions thrown in there? Like one of the lads said to us this morning. I see the FAI are getting a good present for Christmas, or a manager, and it looks like it's going to take that long before they will have a new manager. It's been going on that long, it's ridiculous.
I'd stand this, isn't it?
This thing of release, giving no coverage of anything, and then associations themselves issuing their own, you know, press releases or doing their own interviews for their own channels, that's all well and good, but they have to be open to scrutiny, they have to be open to investigation, there has to be the public are entitled to know, you know, what their book is going to and what's happening if those questions need to be asked. And that's why there should always be a role for a journalist, a sports journalist or a news journalist in all walks of society, is that the journalists are the ones that are there to hold these different associations, the politicians, the wild musicians or artists, that they can be held to account by asking them the tough questions. But if everything is just going to come from publicists and in-house press releases, you're not going to get an answer to anything.
Yeah.
I know, Jimmy, like we've seen it before where people have tried to tell us, don't do this story and don't do that story. And
yeah, well, a lot of organisations, as I said, try to, you made reference to, try to control the narratives themselves, and it's becoming more prevalent. That's an issue, all right,
I've no problem with, let's say, MGA, for example, have been issuing the Mead teams on their websites, and that's absolutely perfect, no problem. Their aim is to get, you know, that they're the ones seen to release team news and all that, and that's perfectly fine. But stuff has to be released to the general media in and around the same time as well, so that you know, we're not just totally shoved to the sideline and made feel irrelevant when it comes to news information like that. And as well as that, managers, much and all as they mightn't like to speak to the media, they have to come out and talk to the media as well. Now, I know this weekend I spoke to the Meath senior hurling manager, Stephen Clinch, and, you know, he's been put in a difficult position where he was asked to fill the boots of the previous manager who left, or maybe was pushed out the door, and he was asked to come in and fill a very difficult position. And you could understand why he might be wary of talking to the media or the questions that might become. But we're the local media. We're not there to, you know, questions don't have to be directed at Stephen Clinch as to what happened there. And they weren't. And he came out and he spoke to the Meath Chronicle after the game in Ballycran and was absolutely brilliant. Great chat with him. Can be read in this week's Meath Chronicle, the chat with Stephen. Perfect gentleman, great knowledge of the game, was able to explain where he thought it went wrong for Meath on Saturday and what he thought went right and what the future for Meath hurling is. And he's a very positive man and very encouraging man. And, you know, as I said, no problem with him, but some people would have tried to say, you know, we don't want them talking to the media. Yeah. It's like as if some associations don't trust the people that they, and I'm using air quotes, employ, even though they're not technically employed. Like, you can't treat these people like babies. They have to let them go out and talk.
Yeah.
It's generally the managers in that talk sense.
And to your point as well, like, you know, I think that was highlighted with Glenn Ryan a few months ago and Tommy Callaghan.
Yeah.
Like the local media itself isn't a publicist for the GAA. Do you know what I mean? They have to be open to scrutiny, as you said.
Like, yeah, well, that was a completely... Well, I won't say it was a different issue, but that was a clash with a journalist and with Tommy and with Glenn Ryan. And and when Tommy tried to reason with Glenn Ryan, he just wasn't having any of it. Yeah, he said, well, listen to the tape. No. Yeah. Okay, right, well, fair enough.
You have to be able to scrutinise.
Yeah, but like you saw with Jim McGuinness and Declan Bogue at the launch of the Ulster Championship, Jim McGuinness wouldn't do any publicity until Declan Bogue had to leave the room.
Yeah.
That's 12 or 14 years ago.
Yeah,
you know, I know Jimmy, you had your run-ins, but with Andy a few years ago. But you've since met him and shook hands and you know, I wouldn't say buried the hatchet because that could be dangerous. but we shook hands. It's been amiable.
We have sort of said hello to each other. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. We have to move on. I'm amazed at Jim McGuinness's attitude. That because. I mean, it's a long time ago. You've got to move on. The media, Declan Bogue was entitled to ask. I will go back to book that Declan Bogue wrote with Kevin Cassidy in an interview with Kevin Cassidy.
Yeah, before Northern Ireland, wasn't it?
Apparently, Kevin stepped out of the camp and speaking to the journalists. None of the players were supposed to talk to any journalists.
Yeah.
But and. I don't know, managers are going to have to move on from that. Jim McGuinness, I'm amazed that he's taking this stance now at this stage after all these years.
For the most part, I find every manager that I deal with, and you were dealing with, you've dealt with them since you come in here as well, I find them brilliant.
Absolutely
brilliant.
Yeah.
I remember one time after... What year did Meath play Cork in the All-Ireland semi-final? Was either 07 or 09? Was it 07?
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, it was either 07 or 09. I know we played Cork, one of them, and Kerry and one of the others. But I remember we were all interviewed. Billy Morgan was the Cork manager at the time. And at that stage, back then, the interviews weren't held in the controlled type of environment that they're held in now. So we just all nabbed Billy in the corridor underneath the stand, in the Hogan stand in Croke Park. And was 7 or 8 journalists around Billy anyway, and he spotted out of the corner of his eye one of the local journalists. I'm not sure if it was with the Irish Examiner, I think it could have been with the Irish Examiner, or some of the other local papers down in Cork. And Billy was answering the questions anyway, and he spotted this guy and grabbed the dictaphone out of his hand and put it down the front of his tracksuit.
Oh, Jesus.
I'm not talking to you, I put the dictaphone down the front of him. And one of the journalists turned around and says, well, you might get more sense out of what's coming out down there than you might what he's saying into the dictaphone as the interview anyway. But I just thought, God, it was a queer way of dealing with things. And some managers have just been that upset by results. they said, no, I'm not talking. I know what happened. Andy did it down in Galway after a beating that Meath got down in Galway. After one of the National League games, Andy didn't want to talk and just walked by the journalists. Now, that didn't happen again after that. But you can understand how managers get frustrated and find it difficult to talk to the media. But I tried to stress the point, you're not talking to the media, you're talking to your supporters. The media is just the back, it's just the place for you to voice.
A postman as such.
Just for you to voice your opinion there. It's so that they can hear and read what your view is. And at the end of the day, all these teams are doing it for is their supporters. It's to get the good mood going in the county. That's what everybody wants, to win for your supporters. Winning All-Ireland isn't for the 25 or 30 players on the panel, and in Limerick's case, the 25 or 30 people that are in the backroom team. It's for the 150,000 people in the area that might support the local GA team. So, if I had one wish, it'd be, and it's not, as I said, it's not the managers, it's mostly, most of them are absolutely brilliant. Actually, all of them, as I say, so far that I've dealt with, have been absolutely brilliant. But I would say to the county boards that are trying to really take control of these media situations, is let your managers talk and trust them, and don't be so afraid of what they might say, because generally they're there for the good of the association as well.
Right. So
this all started again, about how did Meath get on against Down?
That's what I was going to say. Back to our original point, Meath versus Down, fairly.
Yeah, look, as I said, they went up there with more in hope than expectation. Ballycran has a reputation. I don't know where the reputation came from, but I know if it was my first time going up, I went in fear and trepidation because Jimmy had been there a few times. And I was told it's a wet and windy and a dank, dark place. But then again, as Jimmy said, well, you went on one of the nicest days in the year so far. So it's a lovely spot. Yeah. There is a hill that flows from the Strangford Lock end of the pitch, and it rolls down towards the clubhouse. And there was a wind blowing across the field. So pretty much everything was set up for a good day's hurling. And it was a cracking game of hurling. And Meath started really well, went 6 points to three up. But then, as can happen with a young team, and it is a young team, the couple of lads that had played with the under-20s the night before played the full 70 minutes as well again on Saturday. Little mistakes crept in, a turnover of ball in midfield, and Down go down the field and buried it in the back of the net. So from being in a strong position of 6 points to three up, all of a sudden it's a draw match. Then they get another couple of points, and that all of a sudden you're three up.
Yeah.
And then Meath get a couple of points, Meath get 2 points, Down go down and get 4 points. Meath get 2 points, Down get 4 points again. And, you know, instead of being in a really good position at half time, you're like, I think it was 113 to 11 at half time. I did bring in my notes with me this time, but I should have checked them. Yeah. I'm pretty sure, it was 115 to 13 points at half time. So Meath were very much in the game. But again, same thing in the second half, a few mistakes here and there. And then all of a sudden, a big mistake in midfield. Down get their second goal, and it's 2:17 to 14 points with, 25-30 minutes still remaining. You're chasing the game then. You concede decent opportunities from frees in an effort to try and look for goals. Those goals don't come off. Down go down the field, counter-attack, pop the ball over the bar. Meade's next attack, simple point might be on from another free. Tried to drop it in around the square, doesn't happen, ball gets broken down the field, Down get on another point. So Down end up pulling away to win 3-24 to 25 points. Now, it's only two scores in the difference, but 16 of Meade's 24 points came from place balls, with 15 frees and a 65 from Padja Hanrahan. Now, they were unbelievable. I've never seen as impressive a free taken performance in my life of watching hurling. Really difficult wind, as I said, blowing across the pitch. Mm-hmm. And he was down, especially in the second half, down into the clubhouse end. And from a variety of angles and distances and everything, the ball never wavered, never left a true line, and went over that black spot every single time. He was brilliant. He was absolutely brilliant with his free taking.
Yeah.
Which he's capable of, and we all know that, but Yeah. Disappointing to lose in the end, especially when they played so well, but just those little mistakes cost me. The three goals came off mistakes in the midfield where Meek got turned over and down went down and got a goal. And ultimately that proved to be the difference. And it doesn't get any easier now with Laois coming to Trim next Saturday. It's not going to get any easier. I wonder, is there a method to the thinking of bringing the two home games to Trim? The game against Laois and the game against Offaly. I suppose it's to put it into what might seem like tighter confines of Trim rather than the wide open space in Navan, is to try and crowd out Laois and Offaly and limit their scoring potential. But when you saw what Laois did at the weekend, they were quite impressive. Not too many would have envisaged a win over Offaly, but they were very impressive in beating Offaly. And then the surprise again, surprise result was Kerry beating Westmead. I think Mead might have seen the game against Kerry as the second opportunity to get a win.
Yeah.
But when you see Kerry beating Westmead, you go, that doesn't look like it's going to be a foregone conclusion either. So, look, plenty of positives for the Mead hurlers, plenty to build on, and a good start to his time in charge for Stephen Clinch, and good men there around him, and Trevor Cummins, who managed Kiltale to win a few senior hurling championships, and Declan Murray, who is a Mead and Trim hurling legend down through the years. So he's good men with him.
Man of the match from a Mead perspective, probably Podge's.
Was Podge O'Hanrahan, but you know, 17 points he scored in the game, he was always going to be the standout performer. But there were other good displays. Chris Gorman was excellent until he picked up two yellow cards, and that's where that inexperience and maybe a little bit naivety came into play. And he picked up two yellow cards, and the second one coming, you know, he was just after scoring a fine point, and it was 2:20. He had got a point to bring the deficit down to 3 points even after that second goal. It was 2:19 to 22 points, and a super score. Then down got another point, and then he got sent off.
Right.
So for the last 13 plus 6 or 7 minutes of injury time, for the last 20 minutes, Mead were down to 14 men when they were in the game, when they were only 3 or 4 points down.
You
end up getting beat down by 7.
Yeah.
And that could be the difference. If you had that extra man, you know, you could have kept it tight maybe and taken your points from those goal opportunities that they tried to create, keep taking your points. You could have got down into injury time with maybe 3 or 4 points in it and then go scrambling looking for a goal. But it didn't happen. Okay. But it was encouraging, but it's hard to see where they are going to pick up a win in this Joe McDonagh.
What was the red card?
Look, as I said to lads at lunchtime there, if it was Colin Lyons that was refereeing the game on Saturday, there wouldn't have been a free in the game.
Right.
As there was, Pod scored 15 points from frees, and Down scored 7 or 8 points from frees as well. So, you know, there was 40 scorable frees nearly in the game. Whereas if it was Colin Lyons that was refereeing, there wouldn't have been 5.
Right.
There were 2 yellow cards by the letter of the law, and probably getting back to my point that, you know, contradicting the point I was making about Donal Cusick earlier on. By the letter of the law, yeah, there probably were yellow cards. They were careless hand in over the shoulder and maybe just pulling back. But you like to see them things let go for the flow of the game, and hurling especially. Sure. Sure. Let the game flow. When hurling is stop-start, it's a load of shite, really. Yeah. Isn't it, Jimmy? When it becomes stop-start, it can be. Because hurling is all about flow and pace and speed of the game and the skills and the whole lot. But if people are stopping the game, it doesn't get that flow.
Yeah.
And I think, so by letter of the law, 2 yellow cards and a red card, he can't have any argument. But, you know, a different referee and they weren't.
Don't
worry. But Laois next Saturday now. It'll be interesting. I'll have to buy a new notebook.
Can't see them winning a game in that. It's very difficult to see them winning. You know, the turnover of players that Sorcerer Bolfin had to deal with, and now Stephen Clinch, like, it's incredible. 17 players, 18 players lost from last year's panel.
This is probably their. Is this their 4th or 5th campaign in Joe McDonagh? I know not all in a row because they haven't, but I think they've only won one game.
Well, that's probably the problem, isn't it? You know, they can't get a foothold at a higher level.
Mm. It's like a Sheffield United coming up to the Premier League,
it's the same or Burnley. You just can't. You need 2 or 3 years at this level to really consolidate and build and give players experience of playing against top class. Well, they're nearly top class teams. Awfully niche.
Well, I think Westmeath ran Limerick to 7 points last year, didn't they?
Yeah, they gave them a good game. But that's a problem for me. Then all the time they're not getting the football at this top level.
Yeah, like because if they were
now, it doesn't help that there's been a rouse as well, and that's a dissent in the camp, we've had that, and let's be honest, there has been rows in the camp, from what we've heard, and people have left for various reasons, but that doesn't help either. No. But to lose 17 or 18 players is a huge turnover.
And
there's a problem here as well, in the sense that a lot of players don't want to play for the county, and that is a real issue at hurling level. For some reason, some of the top players don't want to. Well, I wouldn't say some of them, but some of the top players don't want to play for the county.
But that gets back to the point I made earlier on about being a volunteer. Yeah, if you're a volunteer, you're either committed to it or you're not. And some lads probably see the thing, go, well, am I really going to put this much effort in? Am I going to volunteer that much of my time and effort for what reward? I know the reward is to pull on the green and gold jersey, but
that's
not going to put the breakfast on the table in the morning.
The GA is an amateur organisation, but I mean, at the same time, that shouldn't be. It should be enough.
It's more amateur for some than others.
Well, that's true. Yeah. Well, it was enough. Yeah, well, it is. That's for sure. Let's get back. Let's talk about. We want to talk about managers getting paid if we want. We've got that route, club managers as well.
And there's players well looked after as well. Not just managers, there's players well looked after in some of these bigger counties. By being given cushy jobs or, appearance fees to turn up and do this for, a local sponsor of the GAA team. Well, will you come and open my letterbox for me, or come and open my local supermarket? And there's some players get.
Well, they deserve the advertisement. It goes back to the old days. John Fenton, I think, the Cork hurler did an ad for some
Chinunction or something.
Some sheep dip or something like that. Some farming product.
Chinunction. Clear name, but it's great stuff.
Great stuff. Yeah. So maybe it wasn't that one, but it's something like that. Yeah. And he got wasn't it some issue like that?
Yeah, he got a few bands, but I remember there was an ad and Liam Harnan was standing for the same thing and he was waving the white flag. That's the same ad.
Is it?
Yeah. That John Fenton was in,
Did he get in trouble with that?
No, I don't think. There was a thing with the Kerry footballers years ago when they got some sort of sponsorship deal with Hot Point or some of them washing machine things, and they got money, and the GAA insisted, no, all that money should come into a pool to be dispersed evenly amongst everybody. But you know what happened? That money had gone into a pool, it'd be like throwing it into a black hole.
Yeah.
It would just disappear.
Going back to your point, Jimmy, about the top players in the county playing for Meath hurlers. I can see both sides of it. Like, I can see why in years gone by it's definitely been the case where playing for your county and playing for Meath would be enough. I presume we all grew up wanting to play for Meath and wanting to play in Crowbar and all that. As the years go by, like the level of commitment even that the Meath, say, hurlers and the Meath footballers are putting in now, I'd say is a lot more than what they were doing in the mid-2000s even.
Yeah.
So as the years go on and the commitment gets more, it is trickier to ask that.
Should be a question asked, is there's too many demands placed on inter-county players nowadays
in terms of fitness and so on.
Yeah. There's been calls for it to be eased up and so on. But
the opportunity for reward is greater as well in terms of, the ability to be the face of a product or pick up an go off and be an ambassador somewhere, and the opportunity, which can often drive people away then, is the opportunity to travel is more freely available probably than it was in the 80s and 90s for lads that were putting in a huge effort.
But that shouldn't be the reason we want to play for our county either,
No, but wanting to play for your county and then putting yourself through what some managers expect of you. Like I see, and I'm not even managers, supporters. Like Colm O'Rourke, after the game against Cavan in the National League, Colm O'Rourke said to the boys, you know, go on off out for a drink and enjoy, you know, enjoy your night. We've got 2 weeks before our next game. And every comment from a former player or a pundit or anything that I read after that was, well, fair play to them. Isn't that brilliant to see? Yet you read comments from some supporters who are going, that's ridiculous, off out drinking. You wouldn't see the Kerry lads or the Dublin boys off out drinking. Now, the boys didn't go mad drinking. They had a few pints on the way home. And some people, Chris, and you're being scrutinised and flogged now to being an inter-county player by people on social media more so than what, you know, people used to look at journalists as being the enemy. Holy Jesus, journalists are the ones promoting sports people now. It's the people on social media, the nameless people.
Well, especially. I spoke about that, a current player on Saturday night, we're only joking and so on, but it was a sort of an element of seriousness about it, you know, because I said, would you like a pint and take a picture of, you know, we're just joking about it. You know, there is an element of seriousness. He has to be careful, this young man, and it's terrible. He, you know, good young player, brilliant young player, has to be very careful because this could happen.
Yeah, you know, you're spot with having a pint all of him out drinking, like.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
It's the demands are too much. And okay, so we can see that's a reason maybe for some people are deciding not to go down that route and turn away from the jersey. But it's a sad situation. And it undermines the whole GAA.
We're probably rattling on too much here already. So look at as I said, the Meath under 20 hurler or the Meath senior hurlers are out against Laois on Saturday. The Meath under 20 hurlers are finished, Tom. They came through their tier 2 competition quite impressively, when they went into the first round of the tier 1 against Kildare on last Friday night, it was a different kettle of fish.
Absolutely, yeah. No, they came up against a very, I think we had said it last week, that like Kildare was a very well thought of under 20 side, and you could see that on, was that Friday night? To be fair to Meade, Kildare got 2-4 inside the first 10 minutes. Now that is very hard to come back from. If you take away them first 10 minutes, it's actually only a six point game.
Right.
It looks a lot worse in the store. There is a lot to be looking forward. There is a lot to look forward to with this group of young lads. As Crash Cardin made the point, there's only 5 or 6 of them leaving the panel
grade, right?
For next year. You'd hope that a lot of them would stick together. I said it to Crash in the interview after. I said, what's the chances of you being around? I know you're saying there's plenty of lads to be around. What's the chance of you leading them? If you didn't give me an answer, but you'd like to think that the fact that there is somebody in them coming back next year, that
keep that continuity. Keep that continuity.
Crash is so passionate about his hurling, like, you know, he's gonna be a great man to have in charge for a couple of years. Right.
Absolutely.
Bring on a new set of players each year.
Absolutely. And he seemed to enjoy it, like, do you know what I mean?
He was on the interview.
And he said thanks to the lads that came along with me, and it was a great experience, and it was a hell of a journey. I'll be a short one of that, but look, it was that look forward to.
And the under 20 footballers, they're still on the road. They'll be out again tomorrow night. Last Tuesday night we were talking just before they played Laois, and that turned out to probably be a tougher game than was expected, but got a goal after 11 seconds and then a goal deep into injury time, which ended up making it look a lot more comfortable than it was. So it's on to Hawkfield tomorrow night for the under 20 footballers in the Leinster semi-final against Kildare. Promises to be another huge game again, but again, this is the team that the football supporters in the county are getting excited about. It's Cathal O'Brick's team, even though they're saying, you know, it's the All-Ireland winning minor team from 3 years ago. There was still only, I think, 7 or 8 of that All-Ireland winning minor team actually played, including nearly an all-new-look forward line. It looks like a good team. The good big men in there, Jamie Murphy, a young Commons from Sanchez Town, and you have Conor Duke from Dunshaughlin, and John Harkin in there as well, and you know, Eamon Armstrong, who looks like going to be an absolute storming footballer. He's still first year out of minor. He's an exceptional footballer. So the future looks good for the under-20s. As I said, playing Kildare tomorrow night.
Very physical team, aren't they?
Good team, yeah. Absolutely nothing little about any of them. Maybe one or two of them are little, but the rest are absolute monstrous men.
Carl, of course, meet manager, a very accomplished coach.
Shrewd operator.
Another great man you want in there to be bringing on young players.
Yeah, good people around him as well, you know, when you see Mark Brennan there.
He's very encouraging. I think they're so positive.
Callaghan was in with them, and Mickey McFadden. Yeah, they've good football and good football knowledge there, you know.
Well, Colin O'Rourke said that's the, he was, currently he was saying the other week, wasn't he? It's the yardstick of a county's football
youth structure is what's happening at under 20
level,
and the clubs.
So hopefully tomorrow night, they continue their progress.
Me ladies, then briefly run through that because I'm conscious that we have to get out of here. The Mead Ladies had opened their Leinster campaign with the expected
win. Expected win over Laois. A really good win, a fantastic performance from Marion Farley. Really drove them on there, scoring 2-2 and scored two crucial goals at a crucial time to kind of widen that gap between the two sides, and that was really, as I said, that was a turning point in the game. But there was some good performances. Like Tira Smith is someone that I've been talking up in my reports a bit. She was a fantastic underage player, but she's playing a different role with the main team. She's a real hard worker, tender role, fantastic energy, and she's playing a real crucial role in Shane McCormick's side. If I was to have one slight negative about yesterday's game, it would be around the handling of Mo Nerney.
Right.
Mo Nerney is it wasn't difficult to pick her out as the target player to target yesterday for Laois. That has been the case for a while for Laois. Mm. She has been the number one star there. Yet she's still scoring 6 out of Laois's 1-7. Mm. And I only picked that out because they had difficulty with the top quality forwards in the lead as well, like Amy Mattin for Amarama, and Louisa Muirherty from Kerry. We tend to, with that top quality forward, you want to have a game plan for them individuals.
But in fairness, when any team that plays Armagh has troubles with Amy Mackin, and any team that plays Kerry has trouble with Louisa Moriarty, same as any team that plays Meath has trouble with Emma Troy Emma Duggan. Same with any team that plays Kerry has said, Louisa Moriarty, any team that plays Dublin is going to have problems with all the stars they have as well. And in ladies football, there doesn't seem to be that tactic of let's go out and try and nullify one player. You don't see that happening too often.
Yeah.
Maybe it should. Maybe it should.
Maybe I would have thought that would have been definitely away. Yes, I would like to have seen that yesterday.
Yeah.
The fact that Laois didn't have any other threats really elsewhere.
Yeah.
Just do something about Mo Nerney.
It's a great trust though of players though by just letting them deal with the top class players, like, you know. Leave your player in position he or she is in, and let them deal with it. You know, it's a great vote of confidence for that player.
Yeah.
Okay,
might not work though, and all of a sudden
Mead have
some very good defensive players as well. Mary Kate Lynch there, and Katie New, and Arnie Sharon, and Tara Lawler made her debut yesterday. It's fantastic defensive footballers. So it might be something that
They have Kildare next weekend. The winner takes all, more than likely clash, or winner gets to the Leinster final. It's essentially a semi final, even though there is Mead will still have a game against Dublin to come.
Mm-hmm.
Kildare played a weakened team against Dublin. I think they're putting all their eggs.
They're putting all their eggs in the one basket.
So that would be an interesting game.
It'd be more of a challenge than Laois anyway. You'd hope that they'd get over, and to be fair to the Mead ladies,
in the interviews yesterday, and speaking to Shane McCormack, who we're going to hear from there in a minute, they do seem to be targeting Kildare and well prepped for this Kildare side. You know,
do you want to play that interview with Shane McCormack
there
now?
Yeah, we'll crack on with that. So here's Shane McCormack.
Shane McCormack, well done. A winning start to Championship 2024. And I suppose after a bit of a break since the league, you'll be relieved to just get up and running again and get the win under your belt.
Yeah, look, a break there after the league. We had a couple of challenge matches, and I think it was important to give the whole panel, 32 or 33 of the girls, a lot of game time over the last 3 weeks. It's been a clean slate in terms of team selection since the Cork game, so there's a lot of girls have been putting their hand up there the last couple of weeks.
It was a slow start. It probably took you a while to get going. I think it was just one score inside the first 10 or 11 minutes, but you managed to get, I think, 3-3 unanswered before half time. So whilst it took you a while to get going, you really did get going towards half time and put the foot down.
Yeah, look, Leash were always going to come out of the blocks quick, you know, and it is championship time, and there was like the pace there for the first 5 or 10 minutes was unreal, you know. So we kind of just started to get going after that, but look, we kept the foot down and we kicked on, you know. So that's what I'm happy about. Look, there's a few things we need to work on going into the Kildare match for next week, but we'll do that on Monday and Wednesday night.
Apart from the challenge matches during that break that you referenced, I'd imagine as a new team, as a new management team, it was probably welcome because the league started early. It was fairly hell for leather for a number of weeks and that. So I'd imagine this sort of downtime or preparation before championship was really welcome.
Yeah, definitely. Look, there were 7 games in a row there, you know, in the league. And I suppose the college's competition as well. And a lot of our girls were playing 3 or 4 games within 10 days, you know, so it was heavy going on them, but you know, the break was welcome.
Marion Farley was excellent today again. You know, in the first half, the 2 goals she got were really well taken clinical goals, and she seems to be a player playing with immense confidence at the moment.
Yeah, definitely. Look, it's Marion's doing well since she came back in onto the panel, you know. It's the first time in after a few years, but look, credit to everybody out there, and especially like we'd 5 girls there making their senior starts, championship debut, so delighted with that.
Kildare next, a team that you'll know plenty about. It's effectively a Leinster semi-final really, because they were beaten today by Dublin, so coming to Navan next week, it'll be their last chance saloon. They'll pose a very difficult test and probably a major step up on what you face today.
Yeah, look, they're, I think today's loss was their first loss in 21 or 22 games or whatever it was. You know, they've been coming through the ranks there in the different divisions and intermediate, senior. Like, they're well set up. So, look, they'll be hard to break down. But, look, as I said, we need a bit of improvement after today. But, look, we'll be hungry and we're looking forward. As you said there, it is a Leinster semi-final, and that's the attitude that what we're going in for.
One player that was missing from the 30 today was Sean Ennis. Is she a long-term absentee, Shane?
Yeah, look, Shauna, she's, you know, since her club campaign, she's been working extremely hard to get back in, and unfortunately she was given a bit of a blow there with an injury there a couple of weeks ago. But you know what, she'll work extremely hard as she does to get back in the next while. So it's great to see her here on the line, and you know, doing the water, and the girls really appreciate her here, because she's a huge motivator to the girls.
Just finally for me, this is probably the one competition that's been missing from the list of accolades that Meath have achieved in recent times, the Leinster Championship. Is that something that's maybe referenced or talked about within the group over the last while, in terms of the missing piece of the jigsaw, if you like?
Yeah, look, Monica mentioned it there during the week. It's one title kind of the last couple of years haven't been able to achieve. So look, we set our stall at the start of the year, obviously, to fight relegation in the league, and we achieved that. But you know, we're taking each step at a time. So Leash, Kildare, Dublin. So hopefully we'll aim for a Leinster final in Croke Park. But look, we won't get carried away. We have next week's the most important game now, and that's what we're focusing on.
That was Shane McCormack speaking after Meade's victory over Leash, Fairlough.
Yeah. So obviously he's happy enough, and you know, just a stepping stone to get Meade back to being competitive at the All Ireland senior level again. But
yeah,
and one team that we didn't think was going to have much of a chance have their last bite at the cherry is the Meath Minor footballers are out on Wednesday night in Ashbourne. They're playing Wexford in the Leinster preliminary quarter final. And then at the weekend, the Minor hurlers, I think they're playing Wexford as well. Flipping opposition escapes me. But on Saturday in Drumree, an unusual venue for an inter-county game. But they're playing in Drumree, which have brilliant facilities there. It's a lovely pitch at 2 o'clock on Saturday. Moving away from the GA, Jimmy, there was another Meath team in action at the weekend. Ashbourne were playing Sean O'Brien and Tullo.
Yeah, the Tullo tank
in the provincial town.
Tullo tank. Yeah, he is a tank of a man. All right, there's no doubt, of course. But he was playing against plenty of tanks on the Ashbourne side as well. You know, it looked like at one stage they were going to get a great tanking. Because Tullo led 14-0 after 17 minutes. And they were completely dominant. And it's a great tribute to Ashbourne that they dug in. They refused to be steamrolled by anybody. And, you know, they lost in the end 38-20. But, you know, it could have been worse.
Yeah,
just one of those occasions where, you know, they showed the spirit and determination, and it was great to see, you know. But Tullo were the better team.
A couple of great servants, Jimmy, on that Ashbourne team. I know you caught up with a couple of them after the game.
Yeah, I was talking to Mark Behan. Mark Behan, now he's with the club quite a long time, but Mark is 51, and he's probably the oldest player playing competitive rugby in Ireland, I'd say. We safely say.
Yeah, definitely.
Maybe in the world, one of the oldest playing competitive rugby. It's, you know, and 51. Like,
51 is still only young, though. So you can't get a little bit.
Well, 51, I suppose. But it is really an attitude. It's really a demonstration of the attitude. Because I was asked, I was saying to Mark, and we'll hear it now shortly, but I was saying to Mark at the end, so is this going to be your swan song? Is this it now, Mark? He said, no, I think I have a couple of years left in the tank yet. You'd have to admire that attitude and outlook, wouldn't you?
He loves it,
obviously, keeps it. But he's
a forward, is he?
He's a prop.
Yeah, a prop.
I was talking to Kieran Roach as well, another prop as well. These guys, you know, they've put in the hard shift.
It would have been a good front row having either them either side of you.
I'd love to have tried it, all right. It would have been interesting in there in the scrum.
So it was a disappointing day for Ashbourne. They were in their second Provincial Towns Cup final in 3 years. Just wasn't to be. Tullo did get a couple of late tries to add a bit more gloss onto their scoreline there. But, you know, they were the better team. But we just listened to Jimmy's interviews or the chat that he had with the two with
Kieran Roach and Mark Behan.
Yeah, perfect. We'll just have a listen to them now.
Okay.
This is now with Ashbourne.
I've been playing 18 years now with Ashbourne, yeah.
Are you 18 years? Yeah. So you played in
all the Cup finals. 2014, I have the Cup medal. Thanks, God bless. Thank you all for turning up. It's great to be in a final. I think it's been two finals now in the last three years.
21, it didn't go well for you.
It didn't go well for us, but I mean, we're there or thereabouts. We won the plate last year. You know, we'll be back again, you know.
Right.
We'll be back again.
Just today, like, you know, the pack was powerful, you know, they're full of pack, wasn't it?
Yeah, it is. You know, they're big men and they're physical and that. I think the power play, I thought we top-tackled well, but I think one or two little crucial moments, you know, we had a score, we got close, we got within a single score of the game, but it's hard in this kind of weather when guys are running hard at you. It's difficult. But I thought we dealt with it for the most part well. The first 20 minutes, I think.
Yeah.
The two scores in the first 20 minutes were really kind of won the game, I think.
It's been a bit of a tough season for you too, as you know.
Yeah, it's been tough. It's disappointing. If you look back at some of the games, it's been very close. Some very close games. Some of those wins, you know, we were only within one or two wins of maybe finishing top four of the league.
Yeah.
The Atari game, like, you know, we were very dominant in that game. We had a couple of opportunities to draw a level at the end and kind of went for the win and just small errors, you know. But that's rugby, you know, that's, you know, you have to take the highs and lows.
You sort of relegated at the moment.
At the moment,
you're hoping Monkstown win next week, is that it?
Yeah, it's out of our hands, there's not really we can do about it, so we just have to go out and enjoy the night, and that's one thing about this club is that, you know, we've lost today. I can guarantee you now we'll be having the crack on the bus on the way home.
Just to let you know, there's a phone being found and it's handed in behind the bar.
Yeah.
So to let you know, the bar will be open for a long time yet, so please make your way over and grab a few points.
First team maybe 10 years.
Oh yeah, at least 10 years, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You saw it ups and downs, but it's difficult to come back from this, but what was it like playing against Sean O'Brien and those guys?
It's great, lads, you know. It adds a bit of hunger to the lads, to be honest with you. You know, everyone wants to have a little a pop, you know, and a little a go at them. But I know it's great. It's great to see him back down at his club. Unfortunately, we don't have a Sean O'Brien to come back down and play with Ashburn, but maybe someday. Maybe someday.
Jim, Mark, you keep going. What keeps you going?
Well, if a young kid, so if a 16-week-old, or yeah, 16-week-old, and a 6-year-old, so they keep me active. And then I'm in the gym probably 5 days a week. And then getting out with the lads. See, the lads are so young, they kind of keep you young. So it's enjoyable.
Yeah, of course it is. And, but keep going is one thing. But you come on there for about half an hour there, didn't you? About today. So about that.
I enjoy that. Like, I enjoy coming on, trying to do something. The scrums are probably my favourite thing. You know, that's where I can apply the most pressure. I'm probably not as quick around the field as I used to be, but I can still tackle the odd big guy or two, so I come in handy that way.
So your father has three kids, is it? Sorry.
Two kids,
right. Okay. And one is only a few weeks old.
He's 16 weeks.
Wow, that's amazing. So, yeah.
Married a younger woman.
And what's the other?
He's six.
Oh, six?
Yeah.
Right, okay, Mark, yeah. So. And this is not your end, this is not the end either.
No, I think I've still got a few more years. I mean,
have you?
So we'll see how it goes. But I enjoy it. You know, it keeps me going, keeps me young.
And this is the oldest. Oh, sorry, you'd be told you're the oldest player in the.
So the refs there, the head of the refs told me that I'm the oldest player that's played in the Town's Cup.
The referee's assessor or something like that, or whatever he was.
So at 51, so
fair play, Mark. That's some going. It probably is some kind of record in Irish rugby. What do you work at, Mark?
I'm a technical service manager for a pharmaceutical company.
Technical service manager, okay. What is that?
So I would look after electricians, engineers, fabric maintenance men and that.
Okay, yeah, very good. Okay, yeah, so but you're living in Dublin?
I live in Dublin.
Right. And no connection to Ashburn as such?
No.
Right.
The only connection I've ever had to Ashburn was Wayne Mitchell that went there.
Yeah.
Wayne Mitchell was my old coach in Beckton. And I met him up in Ashburn. My wife worked for a pharmacy group, and they have a shop in Ashburn. And I met Wayne, and he asked me to come up and have a look at the scrums and that. And sure, I was back, went up on a Thursday. I was back playing on the Saturday. So that was 17 years ago.
That was Kieran Roach and Mark Beaton speaking to Jimmy after the Towns Cup final. Jimmy. And as you said, two good lads.
Two great Angelus Warriors, brilliant guys. Yeah.
Jimmy, just before we go, you have a good feature in the paper this week on, you know, ladies football and how much it's grown, but especially the formation of a couple of new clubs in North Meath.
Yes, Fergal, I spoke to people from Kilmaine and Wood, include our own John Keoghan, but also
this parish,
Chloe Cassidy.
Have a word with them about the pigeons.
Yeah, John Moore's here with us. And, you know, just the formation, you know, they're two new teams, relative new teams I've set up there. Castledown have been there 2 or 3 years. Kilmaine and Wood only got going last year, towards the end of last year, and played their first match this year. But so, you know, we spoke to them and what the challenges and issues they faced. So that'll be in this week's Meath Chronicle. Castledown and Kilmaine and Wood and the rise of lady football in North Meath.
Yeah, and just I'd just like to give mention to a thing that's coming up, a festival of football that's coming up in Dunshaughlin on Saturday the 4th of May. It's a festival of football. Hopefully the weather is like it was this weekend. Just to remember two stalwarts of the Dunshaughlin club, brother and sister there, Maria Keeley Johnson and her brother Dennis, both of whom tragically and unfortunately passed away over a year ago now, I suppose, in Maria's case, and coming up on Dennis's anniversary as well. So they're two great stalwarts of the club and steeped in the history and tradition of Dunshaughlin. But on Saturday the 4th of May, there's plans, as I said, for a festival of football, loads of underage blitzes involving teams from Dunshaughlin, involving teams from Rathnew, who had a great rivalry with Dunshaughlin down through the years, and other clubs coming from all over this part of the world to play in a blitz there. And then later in the day, there's two All-Star games, which should make great watching for supporters of Meath football, young and old. Some of the legends of Meath football will be putting on their boots and trying to squeeze into their pairs of shorts as the Meath All-Stars are taking on Dunshaughlin All-Stars in an exhibition match. And just before that game, there will be a Meath Ladies All-Star team taking on the Dunshaughlin Royal Gaels team in an exhibition match. So there'll be a lot of former teammates of Maria's. Of course, Maria was a stalwart for Meath Ladies as well, and captained the Meath Under-16s to win an All-Ireland in 2000, and coached the Meath Under-16s to win an All-Ireland in 2009. So she's probably one of the few players to have both captained and coached Meath Under-16 team to win All-Ireland. So she's fondly remembered by all her ex-teammates and girls that she would have coached. She was a coach with me with the Meath Miners when we won a Leinster in 2019, and you know, is really sadly missed, as is Dennis, by the whole family and by the wider GA community. So Saturday the 4th of May in Dunshaughlin promised to be a great day, a great festival of football, so we encourage as many people as possible to come down, meet their idols, young and old, from the past, and a few idols from the future as well.
No entrance fee or anything like that. There'll be food and music there.
Yeah.
If anybody wants to make a donation, there's two charities named, and if anybody wants to make a donation to that,
They'll find that on social media and that.
Peace in the Meath Chronicle this week.
And certainly on the website as well.
Yeah. Right, can we wrap it up there? Let's
wrap it up. Yeah, here comes more pigeons.
Yeah, right. Go on. Good
get
luck.
Get the flock out of here.
Ladies and gentlemen, you've listened to another edition of the Meath Chronicle Sports Podcast, talking good games. Say hi!